This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
This time next week, we'll be into a new year, Wes, and hopefully we're playing games. And I mean a bunch of them. That's going to be the key.
No question about it. By the way, did you just say during the break that yesterday you took your tree down?
Mrs. P, of course, she knows.
Well, early, isn't it?
Well, you understand, Mrs. P likes the Christmas tree up the day after Thanksgiving. So it had a solid one-month stay, right? And so today is pickup day for us, for all the yard waste. So we got it out of here. So that was the deal yesterday.
Did you help? We being you and Mrs. P?
Yes. Team effort. Total team effort.
Okay. So you had part of your Packer wellness plan. You went to the curb with the tree and the whole bit.
I schlepped it all the way up the driveway, planted it right out front so they can't miss it. And then Amy's got all those those Christmas balls hanging in the front. So I was up on the ladder yesterday unplugging all those too. So, yeah, I had and that was all done between shows, between the TV show and then the 3 full-hour show yesterday, compliments of the Military Bowl being postponed. So, it was a busy day yesterday. Busy. Not so much today,
though, Wes. So, no real opportunity for the moon pod.
No moon pod yesterday. It's sitting right here beside Chester. But I might do that today because I have no radio show today. I've got no radio show on Wednesday. I get to act like a regular human being with one show. So I got some free time.
All right.
So the moon pod's going to get some workout today for sure. No doubt.
All right. Pack has said we got to get games scheduled. In particular, got to get conference games scheduled at ACC basketball.
All right. Hang in there, big man. Hang in there. I'll throw your rope. I still think we get you in a bubble. I still think we get you in a bubble there at the Hall of Fame Thursday, and you get that show in since we're coming to your city.
I'd roll around the bubble.
That's all right. All right, take care.
So you get these teams. Now we're going to look at conference records from a year ago,
right?
Of teams that went to the NCAA tournament. Now we're not looking at their non-conference worksheet, and we're not diving into details. But here's the note. And you see it on the screen, the last 5 NCAA tournaments, 5 ACC teams have made the tournament with a conference record of 500 below. As Pack said yesterday, remember the days of a 7-9 team getting in the NCAA tournament?
Not this year.
But I'm not sure that's the case this year. Go to the big board from a year ago, you start to see these NCAA tournament teams, and Syracuse had 7 conference losses last year. And were able to get in as an 11 seed. Georgia Tech had 6. So did Clemson. So did North Carolina. Now, Georgia Tech had to win a lot of games down the stretch, Pack.
Yep.
To solidify their NCAA tournament hopes.
Well, I think the key to this, the missing piece of this puzzle that you're looking at on the screen, if you're watching us, is quality non-conference wins help alleviate the pressure to take care of business within your league. This is the exact opposite for this particular year so far because the conference did not do a great job in non-conference quality wins, which is going to put all the pressure on going on deep runs in conference play. You're going to have to win a bunch of conference games. I said, told you yesterday, again, assuming you can play 20. We had 3 cancellations for Wednesdays, 4 actually, when you start talking about Georgia Tech, Syracuse. So when you got to hope, number one, these games are played. That's issue one. Number two, if they are, brother, you better win. And you got to go on some 2- and 3-week streaks where you go 5-1, 6-0 in conference play. You've got to have teams, Wes, other than Duke, because I'm not worried about Duke. Other than Duke, you got to have conference records that are going to be in the 14-6, 13-7, 15-5 range, I think. Maybe worst case scenario, 12-8. And hope that you got to win somewhere where you could sit there and kind of bolster your resume, because this is going to be a tough run for a conference that is so used to putting 7, 8, 9 teams in the tournament, where like Joe Lenardi came out with his bracketology yesterday. There's 4 ACC teams in his tournament, right? Duke's a 1 seed. North Carolina was an 8. Virginia Tech was a 10. Wake Forest was an 11. And then you've got like Clemson and Louisville. Not the first 4 out, but the next 4 out. So There is a ton of work to be done for by a lot of teams, but you better be really, really good in league play. You've got to dominate.
All right. So remember, 20 was the number 2 years ago. We didn't have a tournament. Last year, we showed you the number with the games. And remember, it's based on winning percentages and things like that because all the games weren't played. All right, let's go to 2019. Let's take a look at 2019. Now, you had Carolina and Virginia, each with two losses. They got in. 4 for Duke, 5 for Florida State, 6 Virginia Tech. But there's a pair of 10-8s pack in Louisville and Syracuse. Now, granted, it was just first-round appearances. Nonetheless, they got in the tournament. I seem to recall conversations in 2019 when we were doing the old ACC Central that ultimately they had to find enough teams to put in the tournament.
Yeah.
That actually might work to the ACC's advantage this year.
Well, it's funny you say that because Jay Billis joined us last week while you were gallivanting around the country, and Jay Billis's response was, keep in mind, you got to find 68 to get in the dance. I'm like, man, we're talking about ACC basketball, and that's the approach, but there may be a lot of truth to what Jay said last week, and that is you do have to find 68 teams to make it to the men's side. But, brother, you better win. I'm just telling you, the league, you can't skirt by, I think, at 10-10, 11-9. I don't think that's going to be good enough to get in. I really don't.
All right. I want to dive back even a little further. I want to go to 18 because a team at 8-10 went.
No.
Yeah, the Orange. Hey, it's funny how the Orange ends up on this deal all the time, doesn't it?
Well, not only do they end up on there, but when you go to the result, you normally see Sweet 16. You scratch your head and go, how's that possible? How'd they get in, and then how did they stay in for so long?
Crazy. But look at the numbers. I mean, Florida State went 500. They went to the Elite Eight. Duke went 13-5. Carolina was a second-round knockout to Texas A&M. I mean, Pac, I start looking at this, and I'm beginning to believe now where I would have told you earlier that 5 would be the max, I'm beginning to believe 7 maybe are starting point. And this is based on 18 games now, but I'm still believing 7, you're still in the discussion.
I think the answer to the question, in my opinion, is how big is the ACC's middle class, Wes? What I mean by that is, do you have a conference?
What's the glob look like?
Right. I mean, do you have a conference where, hey, you get 6 or 7 teams that are really are the alphas? That, you know what, those teams are all 13-7 or better in league play, and then everybody else is 7-13. Or is your middle like that standing where, hey, you got a ton of teams with 7 losses and 8 losses, and they all just kind of beat each other, and nobody kind of defines themselves as being one of those kind of teams? That, to me, is going to be the end of the day for the ACC in conference play. Who gets in the dance? How many teams can kind of separate themselves from the middle? Is the middle a group of 6 or 7 teams, or is the middle 2 or 3 teams? To me, that's going to be the difference of whether you get 4 in or 7 in, right, in my opinion. So who knows how it plays out, though?
And this is why we have such a great staff that helps us cobble together things like this for Packer and Durham. Because when we do deep dives like this, eventually you just have to cut through it and say, okay, we got to go to the back end of the house here and figure this out. So in the this year ain't like the other years category, here are the conference records for the worst ranked teams in the ACC. And we're going to go from 2021 back to 2014 here, okay? And we're going to look at this because I think that the conference record is something we got to keep an eye on. Now, Pac, 2021, Virginia Tech, 25th, they were 9-4. See the fives and see the sevens there, though? Miami, Virginia, Duke, and Carolina from 2018 to 2015. That's what I mean by 7. I think that may be the get-in number this year.
I'm going to disagree with you. You know why? Because on this – what you see on the television, the far right side is a thing called AP ranked. You know what? You got teams with 7 losses, but West, they're ranked in the top 20. They're ranked in the top 25. I'll just refer to the latest AP poll. We've got only one ranked team. One. It's different, man. And I'm just telling you, it's different. in years past, like all these teams that are sitting with seven losses, as you pointed out, they're all ranked. Those teams this year with seven losses are not ranked. Big difference. Big difference.
You see the number on the screen, though. 7 of the last 8 years, you could lose at least 5 conference games and still be ranked in the top 25.
Merry Christmas. Right now, the ACC. Let me bring you to the real world. Right now, this second, at 8:10 a.m. on December 28th, there is one ranked ACC team. One. That's got to change. That must change in January, February, and obviously into March. Has to.
So, yeah. Brad Brownell of Clemson will join us live here at the bottom of the hour. We'll ask him about this. His team coming off a great win at Virginia. They lost a tough conference opener at Miami the weekend of the football championship. And their non-conference schedule was challenging, but they don't really have one, at least right now, that surfaces to the top as a resume builder. But guess what? They're not the only one. They're one of about 5 or 6 in this league that don't have a game like that, Pac.
That's right. Clemson had chances, though. You know, big double-digit lead against St. Bonaventure. Mm-hmm. Let that thing get away, lost close. Had a double-digit lead against West Virginia. Let that thing get away, lost close. The Rutgers game in the ACC Big Ten Challenge opportunities did not close the deal there. But I tell you what, they closed last week at Virginia, and that doesn't happen very often. I know we'll get into that with Brad, but, man, they beat the daylights out of Virginia. And that doesn't happen in Charlottesville. Like I said, they won by 17 at a place where they had not won in almost 12, 13 years. So Tigers are playing with confidence. They've won 4 straight, but we'll get into that with Brad Brunell. Jim Larranaga will join us coming up in hour number 3. We'll get into that. And, of course, Jeff Hafley is going to chill out with us for 30 minutes and talk some ball and other stuff to close out the show beginning at 9:30. And your buddy Joe Giglio is coming in here from Raleigh to break down the Wolfpack coming up here against NC State UCLA tonight, which should be a blast. Can't wait.
Yep. Yep, we'll ask him about the setup for John Wooden and the Bruins to take on Norm Sloan and the Wolfpack. Oh, wait, that's not that game. Sit tight. Come back. Joe Giglio from WRELSportsFan.com and 99.9 The Fan is next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Don't forget, Wednesday, the Huddle will be live in Atlanta to preview the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl between Pitt and Michigan State. Highlights, analysis, interviews, and everything else from the bowl games of that day between SMU and Virginia. Wait, that game's not happening anymore. How about Maryland, Virginia Tech? They playing? Yes. How about Clemson, Iowa State? Yes. Coverage starts at 7:30, and then 8 o'clock we'll shift you over to the ball game, and then after it's over, right back to ACCN for exclusive post-game coverage from Atlanta. And the battle of the Panthers and the Spartans. There you see the lineup of teams playing for the most part. There are a couple others that were anticipated to play, including Boston College, and Jeff Hafley will join us coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. Let's go, shall we, Pack, to the metropolitan city of Garner, North Carolina, and welcome a tremendous influencer in the media. Here is Joe Giglio, ladies and gentlemen, WRELSportsFan.com, 99.9 The Fan, and recently named by the News and Observer as one of the most influential people in media, or actually in sports, in the Triangle in the year 2021. Congratulations.
Thank you, Wes. Clearly they left you and Mark off by accident, so I'll check with Luke to make sure that was an oversight.
By the way, who else is on that list? Out of curiosity's sake.
Oh, Rod Brindamore, Hurricanes coach, obviously number one. Nina King, Duke athletic director, new to the job. Yeah. So Hubert Davis, new North Carolina basketball coach.
And you.
You and Ovius just tackled right
in. Yeah, don't
forget
Ovius.
Ovius made it too.
Ovius in there.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We're a team. Yeah. The OG.
All right, there you go.
The OG pack.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
Opposite off campus, so, you know, we got to be careful there. Yeah. All right. So the Wolfpack goes for 10 wins tonight, Giglio. And the only other team to do this was Phillip Rivers and NC State. And they, in fact, won the Gator Bowl. They beat Notre Dame and they had a parade, as I recall. That all being said, this feels a lot like 21 bouncing to 22 in some reason. I mean, this just feels like NC State's moment has arrived to kind of create that stability they've longed for in football.
Yeah, this is an important game, Pac and Wes, for two reasons. Number one, NC State's played football for 116 years. Only once have they reached the double-digit mark, that team with Phillip Rivers in 02. And if you think about it, well, yeah, they expanded the number of games. Everybody wins 10 games now. This is true. Everyone in the ACC other than Virginia has hit the 10-win mark since 2002. So it's important for Dave Doran to mark off this milestone. He's gotten to 9 twice. This would be the third time. He doesn't want to stop at 9, wants to get to 10. Now, you guys missed Festivus, and Doran should have been on this show for Festivus, because when he talks about respect and he talks about people not paying attention to the program, I've got humbling news for you. It's not the OG on WRAL in Raleigh. It's not Lou Takak in the News and Observer. It is Wes Durham and Mark Packer and E.J. Manuel and Jordan Cornett and Eric McClain and Roddy Jones on the ACC Network. That is who he clamors and watches and pays attention to and clamors for respect from. So you guys need to be impressed tonight. So you spend all offseason talking about NC State and the Wolfpack and their chances in 2022.
Well, here's how it works. You need to look good in a game like this one tonight. This is a chance for really a lot of folks around the country have not seen NC State play. And you know what? Given what's going on with the bowl business, with so many games being postponed, you got a primetime game tonight. And you got, you know, an interesting setup in the fact that it's a Pac-12 ACC combo, which we really don't see very often. So there's a lot of reasons why you got your feet up tonight looking for something to watch. And I do think there's going to be a ton of people that don't know who Devin Leary is, doesn't understand how good this NC State defense and how consistent they've been going up against the Pac-12's number one scoring offense. There's a lot to like about this game tonight. Power 5 versus Power 5. The ACC is yet to play a bowl game. Of course, you'll see the Louisville game, knock on wood, hopefully prior to. But this is a golden opportunity for Dave Doran and NC State. And, you know, the other thing too, Joe, that I do like, I like the fact that Dave Doran has embraced 10. A lot of times you'll get situations like this where guys are like, it's not important, I don't want to talk about it. But you know in the back of their head, man, this is a huge game. We got big difference between 9 and 10. I like the fact that NC State and their head man has said, you know what, we need to get to 10. This is a wall that we've got to break down on our way to try to win an ACC championship.
Yeah, and Pac, I don't think he prioritized it in the same way in 17 and 18.
Right.
And I think we're talking about the program in different ways. If they had those 10-win seasons in those seasons where they should have had 10 wins, quite frankly, in 17 and 18. To your point about the showcase, though, and obviously I'm giving you a hard time about the respect thing, but the truth of the matter is if we go back to a year ago, the Kentucky game was a similar opportunity for NC State to make an impression on the national media, on the ACC network, to say we're going to be a team to contend with next season. I believe this will be the opposite of last year's bowl game for NC State. I believe this will be almost a full squad. I don't know if Ike Aquano is going to end up playing tonight or not, but I think you're going to see most of their squad tonight. I think you're going to see them focused and locked in a way that we haven't maybe even seen even before the Carolina game, maybe because think of it health-wise. They've been so banged up down the stretch. I don't know if they'll get Tyler Baker Williams back and some other guys that they need on their defense. But I think you're going to see a focused and determined NC State team tonight. And I think it's going to remind me, and Wes, you could jump in here too, on the game they played Arizona State, the Sun Bowl, where Nyheim Hines just went berserk. I feel like that was a statement game for them. I feel like they'll have one of those statement-type games tonight, score a lot of points, and win this one.
Joe, you know, I also think, too, that the Mississippi State game earlier this year was that kind of game where folks said, okay, we've heard a lot about NC State in the summertime. It was early in the season. It was kind of a litmus test game. You're going on the road. You're not in the comfort of Carter Finley. You got to go on the road. You got Stark Vegas, the Cowbells. And I didn't think NC State responded very well in that game. In fact, they didn't from the opening kickoff and really kind of played uphill the rest of the night. I think they kind of got that moment again tonight. Where, hey, you know what? Say whatever you want about UCLA. You're traveling across country. You're in their territory. You're on the road. You've got the better defense. You got a quarterback that people aren't talking about who can flat out play. Now go prove it, right? This is one of those games that folks that are into magazine rankings and preseason, whatever, for 22, this is the kind of game that you can influence that decision when people are filling out preseason top 25 polls and they go, hey, you know that NC State team last year, man, they won 10 games and they got all these guys back, including their quarterback, and they beat UCLA. This is the kind of game that pops you from like 25th to the top 15, maybe even higher, especially if you're impressive.
Yeah, and let's be honest, when you don't have the personality of Mack Brown, which Dave Doran doesn't have, you have to be able to sell other parts of your program. And usually for Dave Doran, it's on draft day and the players, and they'll have another one in the first round this year.
Yeah.
But if you're not a great salesman of the program, which Dave isn't, then you have to have the Mississippi State moments, maybe the Miami game, which was a prime time, although all their games were prime time this year. But you have to have build up on those. And the Clemson win was great. The Carolina comeback was miraculous, unbelievable. But that can't be just what your season's about. You need to get to this mark and to tell people and to be taken seriously next year, too, because they're going to take themselves seriously. But they have to understand these are the games that leave the impressions. I think these are all things that they understand at this point.
Joe, I feel almost compelled to ask a little bit about what they'll see from UCLA tonight. But I do honestly believe the focus should be almost exclusively on the Wolfpack. Is there anything about the Bruins that gives the NC State pause here about the style of play or DTR or anybody like that that could cause them a problem?
I think if you're NC State and they didn't have the situation at the end of the year where Vi Jones comes in at linebacker and was really outstanding against Louisville and Syracuse, a pair of running quarterbacks, mobile quarterbacks, you're sitting here going, uh-oh, what are we going to do? Because, yes, everyone is coming back next year, but that doesn't mean Peyton Wilson and Isaiah Moore are playing in this game. So Vi Jones is another important player tonight. I think NC State's going to be able to score on UCLA. Now, what NC State's done all season is kind of gone in fits and spurts. They'll look good for 5-10 minutes, and then they'll disappear for 5-10 minutes. If they can avoid some of those disappearances and avoid some of the wonky plays, they had a punt block against Carolina that turns into a first down for Carolina. Some of those type things, obviously, you got to be prepared for. Chip Kelly's an amazing coach, so I would figure he's going to have a trick or two up his sleeve, and they can score a lot of points. But again, I'll go back to that Sun Bowl. I think this is one of those games that NC State can put up 40 points and give up 20 and win comfortably.
And I think this is also a night for Devin Leary. When you look at UCLA's secondary, which is not very good, Devin Leary with those weapons should have one of those kind of nights where, you know what, he flies underneath the radar even in this league because we've got so many great quarterbacks. But his numbers this year have been out of sight. But he's got a chance tonight to kind of make a statement for 22, in my opinion. If NC State wins and wins big, it's going to be because Leary goes off on UCLA's secondary.
Yeah, and this is another where a launching point for Devin Leary. I was told he was given a fifth-round grade for the NFL draft. That's the same number that Kenny Pickett was given last year before his outstanding season. Mm-hmm. So I think if you're Devin Leary, you look at all of that and you use all of that because – quite frankly, as we talk about this offseason and going into next year, a lot of people will be high on NC State. At some point, you need a little bit of motivation. And I think, so with Devin Leary in particular, not being on any of the all-ACC teams, maybe that fifth-round grade, maybe that's something that would motivate him. And for him, really, that journey starts tonight.
All right, quick word about hoops here. Wolfpack in Miami tomorrow night. Jim Larrañaga is actually going to be with us in the 9 o'clock hour. The Manny Bates injury, we've talked about it a handful of times. You and I have visited on the show about it. It's just devastating to what NC State could be. But I got to believe that Kevin Keats has been working on some things in the holiday that are not one out and four in with Darion Sebron holding the ball as much as he does, right?
Yeah, I thought the Wright State game, which caused some people here to really kind of lose their mind a little bit, they played poorly. There's no other way around it. They were flat. They were bad. And you can't have many nights like that. And to Kevin's credit, in year five, they haven't had many nights like that. You would expect them to respond from an effort like that. College basketball is not, I don't think it's just weird. I think it's completely drunk this season. That same Wright State team lost to Purdue by 40. NC State played Purdue to a tie in regulation. So it just doesn't make any sense. And I think you're going to see a lot of results this year that don't involve Duke, that don't involve Gonzaga, that don't involve UCLA or Baylor, that just don't make a whole lot of sense. And I think NC State had one of those nights. I will say this for Kevin Keats, and I've been defending him on my program and different platforms that I have with Capital Broadcasting. He was hired in March of 2017. He hasn't had up until last week. He hadn't had a single day where he was able to do his job to the best of his ability because of the NCAA ruling that had been pending over the program. Yeah. That ruling has come down. It was favorable to NC State, a huge win for NC State, actually. So maybe all I ask for NC State fans is put yourself in his position. If you were hired 5 years ago, and I understand it's an awesome job, but if you were hired 5 years ago and you went 5 years without a chance really to do your job to the best of your ability, I think you'd want just the opportunity to say, hey, this is what I can do when I don't have all of this hanging over me. That's all I'm asking for. I'm not asking for patience. I'm asking for a little bit of understanding.
Joe,
you know what they're asking for, Pac?
Just to be nicer.
They're asking to be nicer.
Right.
Be nicer. That's it. That's all they want to do. Be nicer.
Pac, might need you to have you on the program to break that so we could talk about Matt Rhule, but that's for another day.
That's, you know, my issue is that I have no tie-ins to the Carolina Panthers. I really don't. I used to be a PSL holder.
Me both.
Found a sucker to buy them off of me, and I'm good to go. I hope they win every game they play, but if they're going to go 5-12, it's not. I still get out of bed every day, and it doesn't concern me. So that's my breakdown of the Panthers. Not my problem.
That's good. I like it.
I'm being nicer.
All right, Joe. Thanks. Be well.
You're right. All right, guys. Thank you.
Yeah. You bet. Joe Giglio. He and Joe Ovius formed the OG on 99.9 The Fan in Raleigh. And you can read his work at WRILSportsFan.com. When we come back, off to Tiger Town, winners of four straight, including that 17-point win at Virginia last Wednesday night. Brad Brownell, who's going away present for Coach K, apparently is back in the closet this morning because the Blue Devils and Tigers were shelved yesterday. We'll talk to him about that and more next on ACC.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham.
Arizona State taking a beating on this show today, by the way.
Taking
a beating.
Yeah, Brooks is upset, and now all of a sudden guests are coming on and making reference to the 2017 Sun Bowl, which NC State humiliated
Arizona State couldn't tackle anybody. Naheem Hines still running at El Paso. You ever been to El Paso, by the way? Have you ever been to the game?
I have never been to El Paso. I love the great state of Texas. It's one of my favorite places to go. Got a bunch of friends down there in Dallas, some folks down there in Houston. I love Austin, but I've never been to El Paso. Never, ever.
I've been twice. Been to El Paso three times, twice for the Sun Bowl, once for a UTEP-Arizona basketball game on television. And I'll tell you this, that Bernie Olivas and the longtime standing folks at the Sun Bowl, I'm glad to see they got Central Michigan to come over from the Arizona Bowl after Central Michigan looked at the check that the Sun Bowl would hand them compared to the one that they were going to be handed in Arizona from Dave Portnoy. But the interesting part about the Sun Bowl is Bernie and those guys do just an incredible job with hospitality. I've never met a team that went out there and didn't have a good time, Pac. I mean, it could be anybody in the ACC, and I think it's been a great affiliation for the league, by the way. And we all know that Miami couldn't make the starting mark. But the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl, now sponsored, obviously, in the partnership with Kellogg's, they do a phenomenal job hospitality-wise.
I heard it's a great place to get a pair of boots. I heard that's your go-to spot for a pair of boots is El Paso, Texas.
There you go. I don't know if Brad Brownell's ever been to El Paso. We will ask him. That would double the list of people. We welcome the head basketball coach of the Tigers to Packer and Durham this morning. I said this going to break. I don't know what gift you had for Coach K tomorrow, but I'd just like to know where it is now. That's all I'm really interested in at this point.
That's a Graham Neff question. That's a Graham Neff question, our new athletic director. You need to report directly to the top.
All right. We'll figure that out. Otherwise, I know you're disappointed not to have a chance to play tomorrow against the Blue Devils, especially coming off the win last Wednesday night in Charlottesville, Coach.
Yeah, it was a great win for us. you know, pleased with our guys. It was a great way to go to Christmas break. We played very well and have played well the last 2 weeks. So, yeah, it's disappointing, but, you know, I think probably a little bit expected that some of this was going to happen. You know, certainly unfortunate for us in terms of the timing, because we're in a really good place right now. We've practiced well. I think we've improved in the last couple of weeks, probably coaching our guys even a little bit better. Just you kind of get to know your team the longer you're with them. And, you know, we have a couple new guys in David Collins and Naz Bohannon that are grad transfers that are important players that, you know, I think we've done a better job of utilizing them and just those guys feeling more comfortable with how we do things. And so we certainly were excited about the game, but understand that these things happen and, you know, hope that everybody over there at Duke and everybody else who's dealing with this is okay. And we're all going to be back ready to go soon.
Coach, I want to get back to the Virginia game. You know, you have found yourself multiple times this year playing good teams with a double-digit lead. It had to feel good to close. Whether the game was at Little John, maybe more importantly on the road, at a place where you really haven't had much success, but just the mental aspect. I mean, physically, it's one thing your team's playing well, but I think mentally that had to really be a hurdle that you guys had to just break that door down and say, guess what? We're up 12, we're up 14. Let's go bury these guys and win this thing and get out of town. That was impressive down the stretch.
Yeah, it was. We did play well the last 12 minutes of the game. I thought we played great and, you know, were able to win going away a little bit. But as you mentioned, having won up there, my first time to win up there, which tough place. And, you know, we're going to have to play those guys again here next week, it looks like. So we know we'll have to be ready. But we've had a couple games get away from us where we've had some leads. That's easy to remember. You know, there are also a lot of games we've had double figure leads that we've won. And I sometimes try to remind our guys of that, that, you know, we do have 9 wins. And in most of those games, we got double digit leads and we're able to close. So it's easy to always remember the one or two that got away from you. And we've had a couple of those, but I think we've learned from it. We're trying to grow as a team and build on it, but certainly winning at Virginia on the road in the league at a place where we haven't had much success, that was good for our confidence.
I can look at the stats and tell you're shooting it pretty well, especially I know you shot extremely well last Wednesday night at Charlottesville. What area has surprised you most about this team through the first 13 games, though, Brad?
I don't think anything's really surprised me. We knew that we were going to be a team that could shoot well. We shot well last year. You know, I think the player that has surprised me the most might be PJ Hall, and not that I didn't think he was going to have a good year. He just kind of came in gangbusters at the beginning of the season, and he's been confident all season. I thought it would take him till about Christmas to really kind of settle in and be a guy that is comfortable playing 25 minutes and being a guy that, you know, we kind of penciled in our minds that he was going to be a guy that we thought could get us 12 points and 6 rebounds. And he's been able to do that, and he was able to do it right away. And, I would tell you, though, he's a completely different player than he was last year. He and Hunter Tyson, their work ethic this spring and summer, those guys were in the weight room 2 times a day. They were working out together, you know, twice a day. I mean, it's really a transformation of his body and his mentality. I think he's just grown up a lot. He's always been very talented and gifted. He has great hands. He can finish with both hands around the rim. He can step out and shoot threes. But the mentality, I think, that it takes to be a really good player, I wasn't sure that would come right away, but it did.
You're one of many teams in the ACC especially that has had to integrate transfers. And you mentioned David Collins and Naz Bohannon, 2 guys that have come in. Collins has been a starter since game 1. Bohannon's playing about 20 minutes a ball game. What does that all mean to you to have 2 guys like that who've had success at other schools? I mean, and in Collins' case, very good success. Bohannon has been a stalwart player at Youngstown State. What's their addition meant now, and what do you think it'll mean a month from now, I guess?
Right. Well, they're both very good players. They're big, strong, physical wings, forwards, whatever you want to call them, and that's why we recruit them. We really don't have that. We lost that. We have some guys that are good players. We have good guards. You know, Alamir Dawes, Nick Honor, Alex Hemingway, Chase Hunter coming off the bench. Those 2 guys have played well. But just that big 6'4", 6'5", 6'6", 215, 20-pound wing athlete that you need in this league to compete, you know, we didn't have that. So we went out and got it in the transfer market. We knew that that's what we had a plan to do. I would tell you that integrating those guys into our program, you know, right away hasn't been easy. those guys were both the best players on the teams they came from, and now they've got to kind of adjust to all the other guys we have in our program. And they got to adjust to P.J. Hall, who's an emerging star in our league. They've got to adjust to Hunter Tyson, who's a four-year guy and a very good player who's having a terrific senior year for us. They got to, you know, they got to adapt to Alamir Dawes and Nick Honor, two guys that, you know, are very good guards, the double-figure scorers that took us to the NCAA tournament last year. And so early on, it wasn't easy. And there's a little bit of, you know, yin and yang that we've had to work through. We've had to have a lot of meetings as a team individually, just talk about roles, role definition, role acceptance, getting everybody to understand what we need them to do and to all get on the same page to finish games and to play well. And I think our team, give them credit. Those guys really, after a couple of the losses, got together and had some serious conversations among themselves. I think we're all in a good place right now. And those guys are very good players that we need to play well and have done so here recently.
Coach, obviously you don't get Duke tomorrow. And knock on wood, hopefully the rest of the schedule falls into place. But you got to have head on swivel here and understand there are going to probably be some issues in which you'd lose some games. Is it physically possible to get all 20 in, you think, this year? Or do you think that, hey, it's going to be tough to find a place to get back to see Duke or whoever it is down the road? How difficult is scheduling going to be?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. And, you know, the hard part about all this is the equity of it all is probably going to be lost, right? I mean, that's what you hate, is that we all get a schedule. We want to play it when we know it is. Most of the games are set up in a way that you have a couple days to get ready and have good preparation. I think that's why we were so excited about the Duke game right now. We got back, had 3 days to get ready, and we're excited about playing. Now you may play, you know, three games in 5 or 6 days, and, you know, you may be a little tired, a little banged up. You know, I think the thing that I'm worried about is, you know, we've got this new rule in place where you're going to play with 7 scholarship players. Some of the teams have been decimated by COVID right now, and so maybe they've got 9, 10 guys that are out. Well, when they get out of pause, they're going to be good for most of the rest of the year, and they may not have to play with, you know, a decimated roster, whereas some of us that might lose a guy or two here, guy or two there, all of a sudden we're playing games with 8 scholarship players, 9 scholarship players. That's going to be really challenging. And then when you're doing it in 3 games in 5 days with 8 or 9 scholarship players, 7 scholarship players, you know, that's when it's really going to be hard.
That's the part that I don't think folks really think about from the standpoint of composition of your team and who would be available, right? I mean, Mark and I were talking about some of the CFP stuff. That's, you know, you make those rules, you make those guidelines, and all of a sudden you're just expected to live with it, but nobody really understands the implications, I guess.
Yeah, that's a huge change. I mean, we have one P.J. Hall, 6'10 guy who could be an all-conference type player. You know, when he's out, we're different. I mean, he was sick and tried to play in our games down in Charleston. He played well against St. Bonnie's, but then just the next day he couldn't play very well or very long in the West Virginia game, and we were a different team. I mean, it's just – it is what it is. And, you know, you just hate that for your guys, right? Your guys put so much into it. We have so much – energy, and we've been going for so long. Some of these guys have trained all summer for a big season, and then, you know, this happens. But you got to adjust, you got to deal with it. But it is not it's not going to be equitable, and that's what's hard. You know, you want an opportunity to play with your full roster, the whole, you know, full ACC schedule, but we're just gonna have to do the best we can.
Coach, what would be the ultimate walk-up music for you personally? Game day, it can be anything. What's your walk-up music?
What comes to mind right now, and it's not like I'm a big AC/DC fan, but Thunderstruck. I mean, I want some music we're going to get hyped to, right? Like, I mean, I'm going to make something. When I walk into that batter's box, like, I'm expecting to make something happen now. We're gonna bring some thunder with that stick that we come to the plate. So I'm not like a big AC/DC fan, but that comes to mind in terms of, like, I want some hype music. Let's get going here now.
Yeah, you and Pat.
Let that pitcher know we're going to take a swing at him. I can tell you that.
Yeah, you and Pat Narduzzi going Thunderstruck. So there you go. That's the first time we've had a combination of coaches jumping on the same bandwagon. So, and by the way, as an AC/DC fan, I take offense to the fact that you're not an AC/DC guy, but I won't hold that against you because you're on a 4-game winning streak, which is a good thing.
I feel good if I'm in Pat Narduzzi's. I mean, the guy just won the ACC. I feel pretty good about being in his company. So tell him I said so.
You got it.
All right, Coach. Good luck. Appreciate it. Thanks as always.
Yep. Good to be with you guys.
All right. Brad Brownell, head basketball coach at Clemson. On the other side, we will change gears to another basketball coach that joined us yesterday. Jeff Capel in Pittsburgh have won two in a row. They're getting ready for more, too. We hope. The awkward and balky scheduling of basketball. We'll talk to Coach Capel about it next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Dog walking music. West Durham, this is 3:30 in the morning. Chester, Fuller, let's go. We got Angus and the boys cranking it up.
I mean, we haven't heard George Strait, Earth, Wind, and Fire. We haven't heard anything like that yet.
No.
Commodores.
No.
Isley Brothers.
Walk-up music, Wes. You got to get fired up, man. Narduzzi, Brad Brunell. Both go AC/DC Thunderstruck.
Flo Rida. We haven't heard from. Haven't heard Flo Rida yet.
A little AC/DC will get you going.
We're getting there.
Tell you, that's the way to go.
We need to start asking the student-athletes this question. What's their walk-up music?
Well,
open
we got
some doors for you.
We
and
got
me.
It. Nah, you got to separate. We got the student athlete questions, the hardest class. We got the coaches about, hey, we're getting juiced up. Let's roll. How are we going to do it? So that's what we're going to do on that.
I got you.
Jeff Capel yesterday, though, he was good.
Oh, yeah. He was excellent. We talked about a lot of things, the landscape of college basketball, kind of how all this is going to work. And Pitt, of course, gets Notre Dame tonight at the Pete. Ball game you can see right here on ACC Network. And, we started our visit by saying it's probably really tough right now looking at the landscape of college basketball and kind of getting the sense we're in the same spot we were a year ago.
It stinks because you don't necessarily see an end in sight, but this is the new normal. And so you have to be flexible. You have to be understanding. You know, we're back at the point as we were last year where, especially right now, as the COVID cases seem to be rising, we're back at the point where every day you're just trying to figure out, okay, who can practice today? Do we have all of our guys? And then, okay, we have this game on Tuesday. Can we get to Tuesday? You know, will we be able to play it? And so you have to be flexible. You know, as my college coach used to say, you know, you're kind of running motion offense right now every day.
You know, while we knock on wood and hope to have games, let's talk about the last couple for you. Especially that win at Madison Square Garden against St. John's. I know it makes you sleep better at night finally saying, guess what, we put in the work. Let's see some of the results. But you're on a nice little winning streak getting ready for conference play this week.
Yeah, you know, it was a great win, you know, to go up there and, first of all, to have the opportunity to play in Madison Square Garden. None of our guys had ever played there. We have a couple of guys that are from New York. That was their first time in Madison Square Garden. And so to be able to play in that place and then also to win and in the fashion that we won it in was big time for us. We've lost, you know, several games like that this year to be able to be on the winning end of one finally. And then for our guys, all of our guys for the rest of their lives, they'll have that moment in Madison Square Garden. Mm. And for a kid like Jamarius Burton, you know, for the rest of his life, he'll have, you know, the opportunity to say, I hit a game winning shot in Madison Square Garden. You know, that's, it doesn't really get a lot better than that.
I want to bring, you mentioned Burton. I want to bring a couple of other guys to the table because people are going to start digging in a little bit now when conference play starts. And I know you've played one that was a disappointing night in Charlottesville, but I want to dig in on Hughley a little bit. I want to dig in on Oda Cali, who's off to a great start in his second year with you. And then Mahamadou Gee is playing lights out, and he's long and he's athletic, and he played at Stony Brook. And people see these grad transfers sometimes and they think, oh, well, that's a nice story. But when you see these guys, what was the challenge of getting them to gel? Because I got to believe there was a process that had to take place there, and it seems to be getting a lot better here in the last week or so.
You know, it's interesting, Wes, because there were kind of two processes. The very first one started when we got them here. We had everyone here in July, and we had, I think it was seven new guys. I think it was eight, because I count John as a new guy, John Hughley, because, you know, he only played seven games last year. His last game was December 22nd. And so he's new for us. And so, you know, you get all of these guys together. You're trying to figure out the strengths. You're trying to help them get better individually, you know, and things like that. And we thought that was going and going really, really well for us. And then a week before the season, we had, you know, an injury with Nike Sabande, which is a big loss for us. He was a fifth-year senior, a guy that can shoot the ball, that's older, can really score, you know, been arguably our best player up to that point. And then a couple of days later, we lose Ithiel Horton. And so that became another process because we have this team, you know, which we think we're going to have and we feel really, really good about. And then 2 days before we open up in the first game, now we have a completely different team because we lose two of our best guards. Jamarius is hurt. And so we go into those first couple of games with only one scholarship guard with Femi. And so I think all of them have had to readjust. Femi has had to readjust. You know, John has had to readjust. Mo has had to readjust. And I think I've been saying it. I think we've gotten better. We've continued to get better. The results didn't show it. The thing that I've been most proud of these guys about is that they have showed up every day. And as you guys know, that can be hard when it's not going well. Like, it can be hard. They've had a really good attitude. And they've shown up with the desire to get better. Even when we've had some heartbreaking losses, they've come back and they've tried to get better. And I think because of that, we have gotten better.
Coach, I'm going to go back to Madison Square Garden a second. You mentioned Burton making a shot. He'll take that one to his grave. I made a game winner in Madison Square Garden. And for folks who've never been, they may not understand this question and your answer. But when you go to the Garden, I don't care if it's for a basketball game, a concert, a hockey game, there is something magical about that building. I mean, there really is. And the great fights in the history, Ali, Frazier, go back as far as you want. For you personally, what is your greatest Madison Square Garden moment?
Oh, that's a tough question. I mean, because I've been a part of some moments in there. I mean, when I was the head coach at Oklahoma, we won the preseason NIT, and the semifinals and championship are obviously in the Garden. We beat a really good Purdue team in overtime. So to do that as a head coach was pretty special. But being there as an assistant with Duke, you know, I happened to be there during two incredible moments. One, when Coach K broke Coach Knight's record and became the all-time winningest coach. And then probably my favorite was in 2015 for his 1,000th win. And I'd say that one, just because that team was so special and so unique and so close. And, you know, to come back against St. John's, the place was electric. Everyone obviously was there for Coach K's 1,000th win. And to be able to do it in that moment and to feel the energy in the building that day was pretty awesome.
Wes, the game tonight with Notre Dame, again, Mike Bray, older team. Right? We've talked about them getting off to a really slow start. They had a road trip to BC and got waxed from a conference perspective, but they need to bounce back. They're a team that I think we all think can make a run because of their age, and they made the bunch of threes their last game. Here's Pitt playing with a ton of confidence. They won two in a row, including the big game against St. John's in the Garden. This game tonight is intriguing in the sense that whoever comes walking out with a W, you know, we're going to talk about this a bunch in 22. Who can get on a run, right? Who can get hot? And, you know, I know Pitt's has struggled at times, but, you know, they had Virginia dead to rights on the road. Didn't close, but did win the last two. Something's got to give tonight, right? We're going to now start putting blocks together of teams and say, can you get on a 2 or 3 week stretch? It really kind of starts tonight with this game with Notre Dame and Pittsburgh.
It got housed at BC or the Notre Dame that beat Kentucky.
Right.
Right.
Which one is it? Exactly right.
Yeah.
But they can make threes.
We'll see.
Right?
9 o'clock. Yeah. Oh, look. And Dane Goodwin, to me, is a guy that if Dane Goodwin's going to step in and make threes, and Trey Wirtz, we've been told, is back on the floor tonight for Notre Dame, but Cormac Ryan, Nate Leshefsky, Dane Goodwin, Arrington just needs to be the piece. When they were not playing well, Arrington had to go get them 20-10
right,
for them to have a chance. Because, I mean, I told you this, you'd look at a box score and Leshesky and Goodwin and Prentice Hub would combine maybe for 16 points.
Yep.
Well, that's not going to get it done.
Right.
I mean, Notre Dame's got to the benefit to being old is you got to have those guys do something successful every night for you. And that's the one thing that I think I keep coming back to when you start talking about the Irish. Look, Pittsburgh is a team, quite frankly, that everybody says, really struggling. They lost to Citadel. They lose these games, lost to Monmouth. Monmouth's pretty good, by the way. But I'll add this. Mohamedou Gee and John Hewley are really, really interesting pieces inside. If you haven't seen Mohamedou Gee, you need to watch this game tonight. This guy is athletic, gets to the rim, alters a lot of shots, and does some really good stuff around the glass. He could be an interesting piece if those guys around him can also build some momentum too. But yeah. Burton is a true star as a freshman. I'm pretty excited about Burton. So
yeah, and those two big guys are so back. Different.
Yep. Oh, no question. I mean, because Hewley is 6'5 and plays 6'8, 6'9. I mean, he's really, really an interesting player. And I think he and Arrington will be interesting tonight, too, from that side point in a matchup situation with Notre Dame and Pitt. That's at 8 o'clock, by the way, following the Bowden dynasty here on ACC Network. When we come back, we will recap Buddy Ball last night at the Dome. 16 days off. Just allow Buddy and Jimmy to go to the house and work on the stroke. Because let me tell you something. Buddy had 28 last night, and he had 40. He looked like he could go get 40. We'll chronicle the night for the Orange when they beat Brown after this.
Packer and Durham.